Usually I like to preach from the gospel, and I struggled with this text for several weeks. There are five things that I found problematic with it. One is the personification of evil, that is, a devil. So there are, and that there are legions of them. There are many. The second is the dualism that kind of mindset creates in terms of devils and angels that are battling between good and evil. So I've seen a commercial on TV where there's a devil on one shoulder, an angel on the other. And I just wanted to say that's not my experience. I've been taught right from wrong. So I wanted to do the right thing. And I was also taught to value integrity. So I don't usually find, I mean, I don't think I've ever experienced sort of that inner dialogue between two forces like that. When I was thinking about the importance of integrity to me, it reminded me of a student that I had. For those of you who don't know, that my profession was a clinical pastoral educator. So when people had finished seminary, if they wanted to become a chaplain, they'd come and spend a year with me. And I'd usually have five students at a time. And then at the end of that year, they'd be eligible for board certification. So this was a student's fairly early in his process with me. And he presented a verbatim of a visit with a man in the emergency department. And in the verbatim, he said that he faked his pager going off and then said to the man, "I need to leave, but I'll come back if I can." So the fact that he'd faked his pager going off made me think he really didn't want to be with this man. So I said, "Did you intend to come back?" He said, "Oh, no." I said, "Then why did you tell me you would?" You know, he didn't need to know why you had to leave. I mean, you needed to leave because you couldn't stand him, but he didn't need to know that. He just needed to know you needed to leave. So if you had just said, "I need to leave," that would have been enough. You didn't have to lie to him. Now, all of that's not to say that I don't make mistakes and that my good intentions don't turn out badly sometimes, but that's a whole different thing than the devil made me do. Some of you probably have heard people say, "The devil made me do." How many of you have ever cast out demons? Anybody? Me either. I've been with a couple of psych patients. Psych was my area that covered in the hospital. And a couple of them wanted an exorcism, but really it was a matter of getting their medications right. So the third problem that I have with this text is that it's Jesus as a magician. Oh, all right. Thank you, Chris. So the third problem that I have is that Jesus as a magician, so he makes things happen that you can't make happen. Let me just put it in my pocket. So when we tell God what we want God to do, we are not treating God, we're not letting God be God. We make ourselves God, and God is our servant. Last week there was Nancy called me that there was a man who had come by the office that needed to talk to someone, and I come in and talk to him. And he was having a crisis of faith because God was not giving him the things that he was telling God to give him. And I suggested God doesn't work that way. And that was new to him because he'd been told, just pray for it and you'll get what you want. And if you didn't get it, you didn't have enough faith, so you just need to have more faith. And I suggested to him that would be true if you were asking for courage or persistence or things like that. But Maserati, not so much. On Friday, I noticed that my daughter, who's also a minister, put on Facebook, "Stop telling people to put this on their link and that they'll be blessed. God is not your fairy godmother." Wow. So this concept that we can tell God what we want, and then get that. Not my experience either. And so the fourth thing was the pigs in the story. Because to a Jew, Orthodox Jews to this day, but to Jesus, the pigs had no value. But those pigs belonged to a Gentile who lost a lot of money. And who paid reparations for that? I mean, this man is without. And then the fifth thing is that the demoniac had to let go all those demons. Sometimes it's hard to let go of the things that are bothering us. So I struggled with, what does this problematic text have to say to us today? So I don't believe in a personalized devil, but evil exists. I mean, that's pretty clear. When we talk to our migrant guests, the evil that they've experienced in their home countries and that they traveled here is pretty clear. Evil exists. And then I saw in the news that the unaccompanied minors are no longer going to be taught English, and they're not allowed to play soccer. Evil exists. So earlier this month, I was in Flagstaff for about 5 days, and I was awakened in the night thinking about this text. And I realized this is a liberation story. A story of a man who was set free from having encountered Jesus. His life could be different now. Now that's a story I can get behind. So when we encounter Jesus, we're liberated. And my question for you this morning is, what do you need to be liberated from? What demons do you need to cast out? It could be low self-esteem. It could be narcissism. It could be greed. It could be pride. It could be bad theology. I can't find it for you. That's your work to do, to figure out what it is that you need to cast. But clearly, this young man that I met with last week needed to get rid of some of that theology that said, well, God is going to give you what you want. So this passage has a lot to say to us, I think, individually. One by one, we can each think about things from this passage. But what about collectively? That is, what do we need to be liberated from as a church? It occurred to me that as we are thinking about working with an intentional interim, we have a chance at liberation. We can assess what we have done poorly and choose to do it differently. We can make a conscious effort to act in healthy ways. We can talk about our past. We can understand ourselves better and choose healthy, transparent leadership. We can come to trust each other. We can choose what things we want to do as we have in the past, and what things we might want to do differently. You know, one of the most difficult phrases for a church is, we've never done it that way. When I was young, I did some work on a pig farm, and the pig farmer proclaimed, there's really only one way to do things, and that's my way. And, you know, there may be some of us like that in the church. You know, Pastor Kirk was suggesting that we go to just one service. And my internal response was, no, I like first service. I like worshiping in fellowship hall. I like the band. But maybe I need to stop thinking about what I like and what's good for the church. They may not be the same thing. So I might need to put aside what I like and ask the question, what's good for Redcon congregation? Maybe this transition is not about keeping things the same. Maybe it's about assessing and deciding what we want and what we don't. Maybe it's about liberation. I'm suggesting that some of our ideas, some of our expectations, rituals, etc., may need to be reconsidered. So I want to ask you, what are the things regarding Redcon Congregational United Church of Christ that you hold sacred? We must have that. What is it that you hold so sacred? We must have it. We must. And how willing are you to consider letting some things go? Liberation to be who we can be after encountering Jesus may be more difficult than we thought. Amen. I'd like to invite people to say if there was something they heard that they liked in that message or something that they didn't like in that message. Judy, would you take the mic to people who might want to do that? You have to turn it on. It'll take a second. Anybody want to say anything that they heard that they liked or didn't like?
Maybe they like my wit.
Thank you.
But it brought back some memories, you know, what has happened in my life. To me, it might be a little off track, but somebody told me a while back that, you know, you give the world the best you get and get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you have anyways. And because of that, what happened on Calvary many, many years ago, I learned today that through weakness comes strength. But the best of all is that people are illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Mm-hmm. You got to love them anyways. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. There's someone over here, Judy.
I appreciated your offering the opportunity to not see demons as something big other, that it can be something as simple as an everyday interaction that we might have. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks. Any others? There's one over here.
Okay. My exercise. I, too, have a lot of trouble with the whole images around demons and people being possessed and the casting out of the demons, having been in healthcare all my life and worked with mental health as well. It makes me very uncomfortable when I see it. And I had the experience here locally in the time when I was the nurse here. One of my fellow community colleagues went to the pastor of her church wanting to do some mental health work and was greeted with the response that, no, that wouldn't be happening, and the belief system was that that was a weakness of faith. And I just was stunned that that could be true in this century. So that's very troubling to me when I see it.
Thank you. Any others? Thank you. Thank you, Judy, for taking that around.
Oh, I would like to say about demons, being a Christian doesn't mean that you don't have demons. Yeah. Sometimes I see demons in some Christians.
Thank you.